Blog Talk Radio.
What are you two doing sitting there? Plotting?
Yeah, we plot. Plotting to steal.
To steal what?
Steal the information. All of it.
Yeah, but whose information is it? And the more you learn about this system, the more upset you get.
Oh, my dear Mr. Williams. Peppermint?
Information is power.
If you don't have the information, one cannot seize power. You need to think about becoming mentally competitive. Being blocked does not free you from being a responsible individual.
Yeah, but being a responsible individual don't free you from being black. Now do it.
That's right.
Poor misguided soul. You have yet to learn the rules of this game.
He will.
I don't want to. See, I'm smart enough to know it's not my game to play. Just a pawn like everybody else.
Used intelligently, a pawn can create a checkmate, Mr. Williams, or become a very powerful player himself. Don't you understand? This is all a game. All of this. Like basketball, football, Mr. Big Time Track Star, a game. You play it, and you play it to win, because in the real world, no one wants to hear excuses or empty rhetoric, no. They want to know if you have a plan.
We are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Welcome, folks. You heard correctly. This is live. Not Memorex, that was of 1994's Higher Learning with Omar Epps, Ice Cube, and, of course, Larry Fishburne. Daryl B., the uncanny Daryl B., persona non grata. He is vacationing in the Caribbean, and we are truly envious. We decided to do a different broadcast, or I guess this is a third mixtape mashup broadcast that we've done, really because it's not the same without Daryl here. Daryl has a PhD in comic books. I have a master's. The captain is working on his bachelor's. So we could, of course, go into a comic shop kind of thing, but I think it's apropos to wait till Daryl returns, but we will talk about some comic stuff, and of course we, as what you would expect from a mashup show, we'll talk about the pop, the pulp, and the political. So, the Guardians of the Galaxy, I saw that with the Inner Sanctum yesterday, and I saw Get On Up, the James Brown biopic. I saw that this morning. So, we have a lot to talk about. I'm about ready to do my thing, as the Godfather so always says. And I know it's got to be funky. Get that. Folks, let's go to an urban alternative groove. in honor of the Godfather of Soul. This is a special remix. I played it before. I will play it again. This is Tall Black Guy. You could be confused between myself or the captain. We're both tall black guys, but that's the name of the artist. Tall Black Guy, James Brown, the Big Payback remix. We'll be back in a few moments. You know what to do. We're about to do our own thing. Let's groove. Again, this is a special Grindhouse mixtape mashup show, I think a third in a row, if I'm not mistaken. And as I said at the top of the show, the uncanny Daryl B is vacationing in the Caribbean, and we are truly envious. So we're expecting him sometime next week, and we will, of course, we would want to hear his viewpoint on the Guardians of the Galaxy film. So when he comes back, we'll get a chance to hear and unpack, or allow him to unpack on the show on that movie. Without further ado, we do have another crew member of our own podcast Enterprise crew. He is, of course, the captain. He's about to do his own thing. Captain, you're needed on the bridge again. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Star Trek versus the full might of the Nova Corps. Who wins that, D-Bert?
That's a good question. That might be my only gripe with the film. And my only gripe with that film. Other than that, it was perfect. It was perfect. Shouting out Q-Storm, I saw his review. He has a video review. Actually, I'll put it in the chat room in a moment. And the video review, I was waiting in abeyance to see how he's going to wax about this. Because I said, okay, is he going to hate on this? Is he really going to hate on this? And he loved it. Matter of fact, he thought it was better than the Avengers. So he went in. He went in because, listen, I'll put that in there. Captain, let's just get into the show. Again, for the listeners, you're welcome to come on in. The water is warm. Give us your protestations, your questions, what have you. We can take it. It's all right. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We're talking about the Guardians of the Galaxy based on a Marvel comic really dating back to the late 60s, and there have been a number of members of the Guardians of the Galaxy, and this is the latest crew of the Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm not that well-versed in Marvel cosmic. Not comic, cosmic. I know it fairly well, so I can move about better than the average moviegoer in looking at this. But the Marvel cosmic comics, I don't know if Jack Kirby was on Quaaludes. He was an older man when he even did this. But I don't want to say that. I just think he was just a genius because he worked for both Marvel and DC. And both Marvel and DC have their own cosmic line. But when you talk about how some of this stuff, I mean, this occurred, of course, in the 60s, dating back to the 60s, the cosmic line. And when you really get into this, the characterization, the pacing, I'm talking about the comic books now. They were out there. They were out there. So when this movie was put out there, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it does, but I mean, as far as if you were to pitch this thing, you have a talking raccoon, an anthropomorphic raccoon, you have a tree, a sentient tree, you have a warrior, a green female warrior. You have a half-human, half-alien gunslinger. It has so many genres attached to this thing. Matter of fact, when I was looking at it yesterday with you, Captain, and the Inner Sanctum, I was thinking to myself how much this is like Flash Gordon. It's like Buck Rogers. It's definitely like Star Trek. And well, I should say more Star Wars than even Star Trek. It's just, for whatever reason, it worked. And I'm going to see it again tomorrow. So it's very hard for me to see a movie twice. So it's got to be of a certain tier level for me to even consider this thing. We'll go deeper into it. I want the captain to give his viewpoint, and then we have some calls as well. So we'll open up the lines, and we'll just dig in. Your thoughts, sir, Guardians of the Galaxy. Please.
You gave a great analogy there when you said Flash Gordon, because it was very Flash Gordon-esque. I definitely agree with that. You know, I definitely agree with that, with the colors, the lighting, and everything else that what we know Flash Gordon to be like. So, that being said, people know that I normally like to dig into these movies and tear them apart. Couldn't do that here. Couldn't do that here. There was nothing to tear apart in no way, shape, and form. When you put movies together, of course, what you need, you're supposed to have a great script. You want great cinema photography, that's the lighting, great director, great actors, great score, great music, and you put all that together, and then you cross your fingers, and hopefully everything works out. In this case, it worked out very, very well. Now, the lines that the actors had, the way they interacted with each other, the way they went back and forth was very witty, very comical. Not everything has to be shoot 'em up, bang, bang, like how Captain America was constantly going, 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 going. That's great. But this more or less was switching gears. You're just going through different gears. Any of you who have ever driven a stick shift, you go through different gears. You go all the way to fifth gear, and you come back down to first, and you go back up. That's what you were doing pretty much through the whole movie. So I thought they did, overall, a great job on this movie. The only thing that they missed, now, from my standpoint, that would have really put it over the top, was the interaction with the Nova Corps. Now, this is Guardians of the Galaxy. The Nova Corps is a fictional intergalactic military police force. That's really essentially what they are. And, you know, they can get super powered up from a computer, a sentient computer that they have that can charge them up with intelligence, super healing, you know, faster than light flight, and different type of powers and so forth. So it would have been interesting to see that interaction, but also, too, what happens when you try to get everything in a movie, sometimes you make it into a mess. It throws things off. And then also, too, the movie might have been another 50 minutes long. Did we really want to sit there for that? That might have changed the whole dynamic of the movie, and it might have brought it down to where, well, the movie was just all right now because it was so long. So in essence, you don't get everything. Every movie is always missing something. People always say it's a perfect movie. I never believe there's a perfect movie. Either, you know, the movie's all right, it's a little bit better than all right, that was good, that was very good, you have a great movie, then you have, you know, close to perfect. So I thought this was very well. I thought this was done very well. I thought it was done very well. I thought it was a very good movie. I wouldn't call it great, but it's what a summertime movie should be. You understand? You come out of there, you feel good about it, good. You're looking forward to what else is going on. I thought it was done very well. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yes. As I was stating before, as much as I enjoyed the film, well, you know what? I think we have a caller. Before I even get into my whole diatribe on this thing, let's get, entertain some callers. 201, welcome to the Grindhouse, courtesy of Afro Nerd Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. It's Q Storm. How you doing?
What's
hey,
up, man? I put your review in the chat room. So listeners, check it out. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And the reason I'm calling in, I'm not going to take a lot of time, but I want to just once and for all to, you know, I wanted to justify why I say that I enjoyed this, which I did, far more than the Avengers. And I just wanted to put that to rest. If you compare this movie to the Avengers, which I guess you could say this is kind of like the Avengers in space.
Definitely.
But if you look at the villains in the Avengers, see, what the Avengers was lacking to me, it didn't have that scope, that the story didn't have the scope that is warranted for Thor, Iron Man, Captain America, Black Widow, the Hulk. What you had was you had the Avengers basically trying to keep the helicarrier from falling to the ground. In a scene that lasted for like 45 minutes. And then at the end, you had them fighting an alien force that couldn't even turn corners properly. So that's what took me out of the Avengers. There were a couple of good fight scenes between the characters, but ultimately I was cold because I didn't see anything as a true threat to the characters, to the Avengers. Where in this movie, if you think about Ronan, I mean, that dude was bad bleep. I'm censoring myself. He was bad ASS. And I just felt like there was much more weight. Even the prison breakout scene, I felt had more weight. The way, you know, them having to fight their way out of that prison, than the Midtown Manhattan fight scene with the Jatari. So for me, it was the villains made up. The villain made this movie far more engaging to me than Avengers did. Now, I'm not saying Avengers was bad, but definitely this was much more engaging for me than that film.
Well, I'll tell
Can
you something.
Something.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you see, we have the latest, and then we have the greatest. You see, this just came out. Now, you're entitled to your opinion, and nothing is wrong with that opinion. I'm not going to pull a Daryl on you and say your opinion is wrong. Your review was very good, by the way. I'm not going to pull that. But we could also say, what is Thanos doing? Thanos is the most powerful character there. He's sitting in a chair. You know. So the point I'm making is you really wanted to beat the film up. We could beat the film up. You understand? You could beat the film up. If you really want to beat up the Avengers, you could beat it up. It's just whether you like it or not. And obviously this touched you at this given time a bit more emotionally. That's how decisions are done. So you feel that way. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just making you look at the little different points and how we come to these conclusions with these movies and why I say they're never perfect. They're never perfect. There's always something that's missing there. That could have been this, could have been that. But then someone else would see it if you put it in the movie as it taking away from what the initial product is. That's all I'm saying.
But see, let me counter that Thanos argument, because I just got off of podcast juice with this whole thing. You know, people saying that Thanos, that Ronan wasn't the real weighty villain, it was Thanos. They wanted to see more of Thanos. He was just sitting in a chair, like you just said. I'll take it back to Star Wars. Who was really
Which
pulling
one?
The strings in that the prequel, the original trilogy?
Okay.
Who was really pulling the strings in that film? Actually, the prequels, too. You had Darth Vader, who was like the henchman, but the guy who was really pulling the strings was the Emperor, and he did not get involved with the direct affairs.
Yeah,
it was Darth Vader.
Himself.
Same thing with this.
The way it was written, you got it, though, with that. You got it, because it was about the Force. And since he's a more powerful person with the Force, you let your little minions run in. You see, the way, and it's the same way what you're directing at with Thanos, but you don't get it as well. You know, you don't get it as well. The way it's written, you just don't get it as well. I'm not going against you, Q, you know. And at times I like going against you because it makes for good radio, but I just can't do it here. I'm not going against you.
Well, let me jump in for a moment. Another thing that I noticed about it was visually stunning. You have to admit that. It really was, I mean.
Absolutely.
You know, Marvel was taking a chance on this thing because it's a lesser-known property. I mean, it really is a lesser-known property. And even then, this iteration is not the iteration of the 1969 or 68 was the original Guardians of the Galaxy. Different heroes in that. I think there might have been an homage to one or two of them in there. That's why I have to look at it again, and I'm going to have to brush up on my cosmic entity information, because I commend Q-Storm for walking into this thing and admitting that he enjoyed it, even though he didn't have full knowledge. I think if you have full knowledge walking into this stuff, it makes it that much more enjoyable. So that becomes problematic within itself. But many have likened this, and maybe we will see, time will tell, this might be the 21st century's interpolation of Star Wars. And they were definitely, you could tell, they were definitely shouting out Star Wars. Even when you saw Thanos on the large screen, because the way it was filmed, the way he was kind of ominous looking, you could kind of half see his face, it reminded anyone of Palpatine. It reminded someone of the Emperor in Star Wars. And he was the person who was the more or less using Ronan as a marionette figure, the way that the Emperor was initially using Darth Vader. So you could see this movie was an amalgam of so many different movies, and yet it was still original within itself. So I liked the movie. I can't get any away from it.
In the very first scene when he goes into the temple, did you not think of the very first scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark? I know I did.
That's true, too. That was a little bit of that, too. I mean, it definitely is an homage to 1930s serials, but it's in the future. So there were things going on. Well, actually, if you think about it, it was in the present, because the Avengers exist in this timeline. So even that, you have to wrap your head around that. But my only thing is, and I'm a guy that knows comics fairly well, but the cosmic line, I read many of the cosmic books, but they're out there. You know, I read them when I was a kid. So Daryl's probably the only person that could actually, you know, spit stuff out in a knee-jerk kind of way and like bam, 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 bam. I'm not that good with this. Anything else? The cosmic line is a very existential, you know, a lot of things. Because these guys, some of these guys that were involved in this thing, Jim Starling and Jack King Kirby and Stan Lee, many of these guys were well-educated. Some of them were not. They were also very adept at fantasy. This stuff is, I mean, if you go into this stuff, and it's one thing that you know, as a comic book guy, I have annoying thing with me. This gnaws in the back of my craw. The fact that Fox is involved, you know, listen, you're going to hear my rants. I'm not going to go into it as always, but the fact that you have Fox and Sony, well, more Fox than Sony, but Fox has a grip on the Fantastic Four, and by extension, perhaps the other half of the cosmic equation. It reminds you of, as great as Guardians movie was, it could be exponentially better if you had the Fantastic Four involved in this thing. You got the Watchers, you got Galactus, you got Silver Surfer. That's a large swath of the cosmic line. And also, fantastic mythos, pathos. The Silver Surfer story itself, that's the genius of Marvel. And I love DC. But when it really comes down to it, DC can't really blow a candle against Marvel Comics. And you really get into the depth of Marvel. DC is so kind of milquetoast. But I'm still going to check, guys. Listen, I still patronize DC. God bless them. But when you think about what Marvel really delved into, existentialism and space and science and stuff they were throwing around. Stan Lee would always talk about, you know, he knew of gamma rays, but didn't know what they really were. But he would throw around gamma rays and cosmic rays. But these are real terms. It's a great time, but, you know, even with the Nova Corps, the costumes really weren't to my liking. They were kind of softer versions of what we would want to see on screen. And the power set of the Nova Corps, I mean, the Nova Corps as a story. I mean, the Nova Corps is analogous to the Green Lantern Corps. And, you know, the Nova Corps could really be a movie unto itself when they get into the Nova storyline. I mean, you're talking about, I think DC bought anywhere from 5,000 to 9,000 intellectual properties from Marvel for $4 billion. It was a steal. When you think about it, it was a steal. Because they have movies allegedly lined up from this point, but really going from 2008 to 2028. And even if they get to 2028 with their films, I guarantee they haven't even touched the surface of what Marvel could really offer. If they touch it, if Guardians of the Galaxy, and it looks like it's going to be a very successful film. They were hoping for $60 million. It's going towards $90 million. This is a smaller property. The Guardians is an afterthought, and it's big. I mean, come on. It's amazing. Amazing stuff.
I just have one question, if you don't mind, D. Burton, and I'll concede the floor.
Sure.
This is not a spoiler, but at the beginning of the film, when we first see Peter Quill on that barren planet, he pulls out this flashlight, and there's some sort of electromagnetic scan of the terrain, and then he starts to see, like, ghost images of people walking back and forth. What was that? Because that didn't really pay off onto anything. I didn't follow what that was, what we were seeing there. Did any of you pick up on what that was?
That's why I have to see it again tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Because it's just
okay.
It's such a spectacle. And actually, I've been reading the new Guardians. I knew of the Guardians for many years. And was, you know, I would buy comics as a kid. You know, you just pick something up and never really took to it. This version of the Guardians. Now, I took to Nova as a kid. I took to Nova. I believe Carmine Infantino was an artist on that during the late 70s, early 80s. And they even snuck in. It's so funny. One thing I remember as a kid, they snuck in a Barry Allen Wally West reference in a Nova comic.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to remember which book that is. I have so many comics, I'm not even going to – I'd rather buy the book than look through my collection to find the same thing. But because Carmine Infantino was also drawing The Flash at about that time. And I didn't think that was even possible. But I remember they were in the background having a conversation as if they were just like guys in a mall. You saw, this is when, who was the original Nova? Rich Rider, I believe. Rich Rider was the original Nova. But I knew Nova fairly well. I loved the way that character dealt, because I was into Speed. That's probably another reason why they had Wally West and Barry Allen in that little panel. It was just a panel reference. But he used to talk about Nova Speed. He was a very fast, even in flight, character. He was super powered. As soon as he put that helmet on, you know, he had all these powers. And we didn't get any of that in this movie. The costuming for the Nova Corps should have been far more badass, and their power set should have been badass. They were literally like cops. We know they're cops, but they're super-powered cops. So I don't understand that, you know, this is a Marvel movie. Everything else they paid close attention to. But this one, that one thing rested up for me. Other than that, it was a terrific movie. And maybe the end was cute, but it was cute. But I would have preferred, I'm talking about the after credits ending. I'm not going to say anything about it for our audience, but
yeah, I agree with you.
Wanted a greater payoff. I would have wanted a greater payoff. But
I wanted something that was going to lead me to the next film. That's what I wanted.
Oh, you know, one more thing, because we're going to go to a groove. One more thing I wanted to mention, in all deference to Q-Storm. He may be on something about the Avengers. I love the Avengers. I really do. But I think this is the deal with how Marvel is doing things. The first phase, you know, they have them in phase one, phase two, phase three. They're just going to get better as things go along. The first phase in many of these Marvel Comics movies were okay. Maybe the only one that really knocked it out of the box for the first phase was Iron Man 1. But the deal is, Marvel/Disney did not know the kind of juggernaut these things were going to ultimately become. And the money wasn't necessarily there. Now that the Avengers is truly a billion-plus dollar franchise, Avengers 2 is going to blow your mind. I'm confident. Because the way we saw Captain America 1 versus Captain America 2, Captain America 1 was okay. It was introductory, yada, yada, yada. But 2, the pacing, the storyline, the depth, the fact that it was able to tap into, political intrigue dramas from the 70s. That's why you had Robert Redford there. It was just a better quality film. And it's because they had enough money to do what they needed to do. And actually, I think the reason why Guardians was even better as a first-time outing is because Marvel, as they say on the street, Marvel's guap was up. Simple as that. These movies are just going to be... So I think Avengers 1... You will see flaws in it. It was pretty good. It was pretty good. But they didn't have $1 billion behind them when they did number one. Number two, they know that's going to be a $2 billion movie. So they're going to put maybe $350 million into Avengers. I don't know what the price, but it's going to be astronomical. They're going to be able to invest more so it will be visually stunning. It's going to be what it needs to be. It's going to be what it needs to be, and I think that's where Q-Storm's critique has credence. Is that, you know, one was okay, but it's still a test. Number two, that's going to be a whole different thing. What do you think about that, Captain? I that's my belief. These films are just the phase two and going forward. They're just going to give you a better product because the money is there. The guap is up. As the streets would say.
My belief is that, you know, superhero films don't really stand the test of time. So after about 2 years, you're ready to diss them. That's just the nature of superhero films, man. That's my belief of it. You know, the only thing with the Superman with Christopher Reeves, that's it. Other than that, this is what we do, you know? This is what we do. You know, that's what I really believe. So it's the latest. And when the latest, when you have more money, obviously it's going to get better. Because it's the latest, not necessarily the greatest. There you go.
Well, I might agree with you a little bit, but I think that the Nolan films, and I think Nolan is truly an auteur, he attached a lot of gravitas to a superhero film. I'm also intrigued about Interstellar, which is coming up shortly. So we'll see. But he seems not to be able to make a bad movie. That's just my opinion. All right. Now, Q, you may want to stick around. I'll let you stick around if you like for the second part, because I'm going to talk about James Brown, Get On Up, that biopic. I saw that earlier this morning, actually. I want to talk about that as well. And in homage of The Godfather, Soul Brother number one, let's go to Give It Up or Turn It Loose, Mr. James Brown. We'll be right back. And you know, you have to groove to this. We'll be right back. James. Oh, man, this is going to be a rough one right here. Again, folks, give it up or turn it loose. The mighty, legendary, one and only, soul brother number one, godfather of soul, the inventor of hip-hop music. I'll say that, and I'll back it up with facts. Trust me on that. I'm being somewhat facetious, but not exactly. Hip-hop owes a huge financial, cultural debt to James Brown, unquestionably. And a lot of other musicians owe a lot to James Brown. So we're going to get into it. Talking about the biopic, Get On Up, with Chad Boseman as the character, or portraying James Brown. And James Brown was a character. Let's be honest. He was a character. And I will admit that amazingly, for those who are longtime listeners, they know I am immersed in groove and jazz and funk. That's really what I'm about as far as my musical taste. I didn't like James Brown as a youth. I didn't get James Brown. And I think the Oracle even said he didn't get James Brown, because if you listen to James Brown at a glance, you just say, this is some screaming Negro at a glance. But maybe it was Prince.
I don't believe
maybe,
you said that.
No, I'm being honest. I'm all about honesty.
Woo! That was good. That was good.
If it wasn't for Jimi Hendrix, if it wasn't for Bootsy Collins and George Clinton, I mentioned Prince, of course, and early hip-hop, the golden age of hip-hop, that's when I said, oh, wait a minute. And I think the Oracle also, now he loves James Brown also, but as I said, his point man really is Wilson Pickett. And Wilson Pickett is actually shouted out in the film as well. James Brown makes a reference to Wilson Pickett. And Wilson Pickett is the man. Trust me on that. And actually, this video on YouTube of Wilson Pickett and James Brown on stage together, you got to see that. Matter of fact, there's footage of James Brown and Sammy Davis Jr. Got to see that. This stuff, thank God for YouTube. As much as YouTube gets for certain things, it is the last bastion of the visual archive that the everyman has access to. So you two have to be applauded for allowing us to even see, and for young folk to see this. I remember seeing a 15-year-old, a person who said he was 15, and he was very, very amazed and deferential and almost saddened that he was 15, because he was looking at James Brown and Sammy Davis Jr. mixing it up. And you're talking about heavyweight talents. Talk about cosmic level. From the Guardians reference, they're cosmic talents. So when he saw these two doing it, and folks think of Sammy in one way, but they don't know that Sammy is perhaps the greatest mimic there ever was. He could do anything, anybody. And he was doing a cakewalk and working out with James Brown step for step, because he's that good. And to see masters at work, it's nothing like it. And from what we see, I'm gonna take a dump, Captain. I wish I had my sound effect. I'm going to take a dump on 2 Chainz and those clowns, but they're not in the same universe. They're not in the same universe. Those guys are just figuring out how to rub sticks together, and the Giants I just mentioned are the Celestials. That's the difference in a comic book reference. James Brown, Sammy Davis Jr., Miles Davis, all those guys, they're Celestials. 2 Chainz, they just figure out how to wipe their butts with leaves. That's my comparison. I said it. That's it. Afro Nerd commands it. Speak, mortal. Afro Nerd commands it. Check out Hercules on YouTube, folks. 1966 Marvel Comics. That's how those guys spoke. Anyway, so looking at this film, I thought that it. Well, first of all, great film, great acting. You think of Jamie Foxx as Ray, where you really couldn't, it was indistinguishable between, honestly, I'm not a fan of Jamie Foxx, but I'm a fan for his performance. His performance as Ray, it was indistinguishable between him and the actual Ray. That's when you knew he had to get the Oscar on that. He had to. We'll see what he does with Mike Tyson. That might be interesting. That's another thing he's doing. Chad Boseman comes close. He comes very close. His dancing, the way he spoke, definitely. But I'm kind of going ahead of myself. When I was basically saying is I didn't necessarily have a great fondness for James Brown as a youth early on. Although the music was always in my background, it was played in my parents' kitchen and that kind of thing. in the neighborhood. James Brown was there, but I didn't get him until I became a young adult and went deeper into musicology. And when you think about the grooves he created, the man was a genius. He was a troubled, uneducated man, but as far as his business acumen, his almost some, because, you know, you're talking about someone who had a sixth or seventh grade education, but he had a natural instinct for business, and I admire the fact that he had people address him as Mr. Brown. So we were able to to our show, the importance of our show, we were able to interview Maceo Parker, the legendary Maceo Parker. And if I were you, to the listening audience, go into the archives and check out the interview. And he talks about working with Mr. Brown, as he put it. There were issues with the band. You know, he would fine them for lateness, fine them for missteps, fine them for misplayed cues, misplayed notes. But, hey, the product was what the product was. But in this film, you get a chance to see the full breadth of James Brown as a youth and what it was like to be a youth in the 30s in Augusta, Georgia, looking at men being hanged and the extreme poverty and his parents, how they were somewhat ignorant, and they showed him not really showing a loving relationship. You know, you were able to see how, as a kid, he was able to absorb a lot. So he absorbed all that poverty, pathos, the music that was around, the anger. All that is what created James Brown. So he was a mad genius. But when you think about his grooves, ladies and gentlemen, his grooves to this day, I saw children in the theater tapping their feet, which goes to show you that they have to be exposed to this stuff. The Oracle in his barbershop exposes young people to jazz so much so that some of the young folks will say, I don't want to listen to hip-hop anymore. This is true. My father has mentored folks, young men, young children. Now they're young men. But I've been in the midst of his exposing these young people to jazz music so much so that they would tell you, I kind of don't really like hip-hop like I thought I did because Mr. Nat, as he is called, or the Oracle, exposed me to this jazz music. So young people are truly sponges, and James Brown was a sponge for his time, and the movie does show you that. So I would advise our listenership, you got to check out this movie. You have to support it. It is something special. To the Oracle's chagrin, and I say this, because, again, I got to be honest, Brian Grazer, who is Ron Howard's partner, movie business partner, he's a producer on this, as well as Mick Jagger. And he's also in the film, the character, Mick Jagger, is also in the film, which is interesting. But Mick Jagger had a great deal of affection and respect for James Brown as a colleague slash performer. But the Oracle was, he's a little bit troubled by the fact that once again, are subsidizing these films. They're acknowledging black greatness, black genius, and we're not. We're not. Oh, we should be. God bless Don Cheadle. Don Cheadle's behind a biopic for Miles Davis, and that should be interesting, and I can't wait to see that. But there really should have been a large black involvement, maybe in the writing, I think it was written by some folks of color. But, I'm appreciative that Mick Jagger had the affection, and I guess the money to bankroll this thing. But Brown is a cross racial pop culture icon, but there should have been some more black folk to honor this man on the financial side and on the creative side for this film. And I hope going forward that we don't mess up on this kind of stuff, ladies and gentlemen. We can't have we can't ignore our heroes. I know that Andre 3000 has made a movie with Jimi Hendrix, and that movie is bound to fail because the family, for whatever reason, the estate, I think it's actually a stepdaughter. I don't know if it's like a blood relative that's running Jimi Hendrix, Inc. For whatever reason, she really did not allow for the movie, for Jimi Hendrix music to be the soundtrack for that thing. And you got to have Jimi Hendrix music in order for this stuff to be brought home. Get On Up works because it's rife with James Brown music, some stuff that was released, and some unreleased tracks. That drives the – James Brown, it's bound not to fail because it's got the funk. I can't put it any other way. Catherine, I don't know if you saw this. Any thoughts on it, even if you didn't see it? Any thoughts on James Brown or the importance of this film?
Well, I have not seen the film as of yet. We here at Afro Nerd Radio featuring Captain Kirk and the listeners that listen to this show know the importance of James Brown. James Brown is the essence in all of this music that Afro Nerd was just tearing apart, called hip-hop, which some people would call feces pop. That's what some people do call it. He is the essence, the start, the engine, the gasoline to this modern-day era with this kind of music for these black youth at this given time. So, you know, it's very important to know the history and everything else pertaining to James Brown. You could read the history, but also, you know, you could YouTube it, just as Afro Nerd also said, but it's also good to go see the movie. So I will go see the movie to brush up on my James Brown information, along with the other stuff that I read about James Brown. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Q, did you see this?
I have not had a chance to see it yet. I had to choose, and I chose Guardians of the Galaxy, I admit it. But I did want to ask you, you've seen it. I knew going in that the director was going to use a technique where he kind of jumped back and forth through James Brown's timeline. And I've heard some critics say that kind of detracted from the film. How did you feel about that?
Well, that is definitely a part of the film where he goes back and forth in time, almost like a memento kind of deal. Well, listen, I already have, unlike Guardians of the Galaxy, where I have maybe 50% knowledge on the subject matter, or let's say 65%. James Brown, I knew full well what James Brown was about. I knew his history. So it didn't bother me. If you know James Brown, I was aware of his late 80s drug foibles, his brief time in prison, if you remember that. That was a big story then, and his evading the police. And you know, it was going back and forth. I mean, listen, that's not the only film that does that. It just doesn't bother me. For sometimes people need to be, I don't know, they need a straight storyline or a straight numerical timeline. It's got to go 1 to 10. For me, you can go from 1 to 7, back to 2, from 3 to 10. It doesn't bother me because I still get it. It didn't bother me whatsoever. It didn't mean anything to me. I mean, I looked at it as just an artistic kind of thing. They were doing things where they would just focus on young James Brown. Like when James Brown, like for instance, as an advanced age, because I think James Brown was in his 60s when he was arrested, late 50s, early 60s, when he was finally stopped by the police, part where the actor that portrayed him as a little boy got out the vehicle. That's just artistic license. You knew what that meant. That was showing you, that was making a direct correlation between James Brown's, what affected him as a youth, the demons of his youth affected him as an adult. So when you saw a 60-year-old James Brown behind the wheel And then when he actually got out of the vehicle, it was a 10-year-old James Brown. That was just dramatic license, artistic license. I got that. For some folks, they, for whatever reason, maybe these are millennial babies. They can't think in an extra dimensional kind of way. I don't mind artistic filmmaking, you know, if it's done right. I thought it explained a lot. I mean, it's just stretching your mind, working your mental muscles. Unfortunately, nowadays, it appears that the millennials, they require things to be literal. Just literal. The character, the Destroyer, what's his code name, from The Guardians?
Drax.
Drax. The joke of Drax was he said his race is literal. Everything was literal to him. And that's the millennial generation. Perfect. Batista did an excellent job on that, by the way. Excellent job as Drax. But yeah, if the joke of that character was he doesn't understand double entendre or innuendo. So I suspected it. When I was looking at the theater, at the movie, I said, you know what? I suspect some folks are not going to get some of this stuff. But to me, it led to the depth of the movie. But I leave that up to you, Q. I want you to, because I know you are, you will get into this film. You know, you might look at things differently from a filmmaker perspective. But I thought that as a movie goer, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought the music was fantastic.
I plan to see this Monday. I had to make a choice this weekend. I chose White Folks in Space over The Godfather of Soul. So.
Yeah. Brainwashing, sir. Because I saw when we saw Guardians, we saw there was a large crowd for Get On Up, and I said to I made a calculation. Said, okay, I can't allow more than 24 hours to pass without seeing Get On Up, just for respect purposes. I said, okay, I can't. You know, we love the Guardians, and we love Marvel Comics, but you got to. It makes a nice stew to see Guardians and James Brown within 24 hours. That was my own thing. You know, there's a person in the chat room also. I want to address him. Critical Dre. He says, speak on people of color being painted. White characters are not painted. Sir, you're being hyperbolic and a little sensitive on this one. Yes, I think he's referencing Zoe Saldana, that she was painted green. Gamora is a green character, Dre. She's a green character. And also, Batista was painted. There were white folks in the movie that were painted in that movie. There have been white folks that have been painted in Star Trek. You know, the deal is, we're going to talk about this in a moment, because Sergio...
Yeah, white people painted red also. Red also.
Yes.
You know, in there.
You can't get into hyperbolic statements. You know, listen, we can't be like Fox News where everything is exaggerated. You know, come on. The people have been painted. It's just that the deal, I think what the heart of what you're saying is, we've got to develop our own entities, our own movies. And that's something I want to get into with Sergio Mims. Sergio, friend of the show, Shadow and Act, of the great Shadow and Act site. And also, Q does double duty at Shadow and Act on occasion as well. He highlighted something involving Woody Allen, legendary director Woody Allen, and some comments he made about not hiring black folks or black actors if the part doesn't call for it. So that's a matter of interpretation. Some folks are not – I think Sergio didn't necessarily take kindly to that. I'm in the middle on this one. I'm a fan of Woody Allen's work, not of his character. Of his work, not his character. But I'm not really upset about what he said. I think it just lends itself to black folk needing to patronize their own stuff and create their own stuff. Hell, black folks in Africa shouting out Nollywood. Nigeria has a functioning, successful, self-contained media movie-making enterprise. They have an industry. Nollywood, I think, is second unto Bollywood. And black folks, the Africans in the Americas, have more money. And amazingly, probably more excuses. I'm not really expecting white people to look out for black interests. I mean, let's be logical. It doesn't even make any sense. I mean, you know, I know it doesn't may not sound nice to your ears, but we're still talking like we're slaves. You know, we've been emancipated. We've got the emails. We've been emancipated quite a while now. There's no excuses. Make your own movie. White people are not going to. I mean, listen, you're lucky that Mick Jagger and Brian Grazer had a fondness for this story. But black folks should have been behind this. I mean, we're ready to exalt and spend money with Michael Jordan. The excuses are wearing thin. We're being too sensitive, I think, on this one. White cats are not painted. Come on.
You know, talking about the Woody Allen thing, I'm a huge Woody Allen fan, and there are a dearth of black actors in his films. But ironically, the first time I ever heard of Chiwetel Ejiofor was in a Woody Allen film. He played a college professor in Melinda and Melinda.
Yeah, Chiwetel, he was in there. I forgot the young lady that was in. She played a prostitute.
Yeah.
I forgot that. And that's, you know, listen, that's a stereotype. It is what it is. I guess the feeling is that, well, listen, he's a man of Jewish descent living in New York, in a multicultural New York. But the reality is that if you want to take it in a harsh way, what he says makes sense. Like, you could be open enough. You wouldn't want people to be open-minded enough to hire a black actor or actress where it isn't really where the part doesn't necessarily have to be a white person. You know, it's not necessary for every part to be a white person portraying that part. We've seen that before, and many of these performances have worked out great, maybe even better than great. But at the same time, I think it's folly to always look for white people to create parts for you. You have to make parts for you. Nollywood is doing it. And we're being told that Africans in the Americas are perhaps the most successful black folks in the world. I mean, there's enough money that black folks contribute to and create to warrant our own self-sustaining industry. But we I don't know what's going on.
And this is why, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it briefly. This is why, although I do not like his work at all, but I will maintain that a Tyler Perry has to exist just so that there is a presence and that we do have something at the table. You know, so although I don't really like his technique, I think it's important that he is there.
Yeah, well, that's the issue with him is that, you know, as far as business acumen goes, there should be at a minimum 10 to 15 black folk, male and female, that are doing what Tyler Perry is doing, not necessarily on a creative side, not what he does creatively. But they should have their own universes doing what they're doing. It should be a sci-fi, maybe several sci-fi fantasy guys and gals doing what they're doing, folks that are doing heavy dramatic pieces, folks that are doing documentary pieces. I mean, there should be enough of a tapestry with people of color creating their own universes, self-sustaining universes, where even so self-sustaining that black folks can be the majority patrons, and you can still thrive. But I don't know what, you know, listen, we saw this when things were worse. Oscar Michaud was benefited from that in the 1920s, in the 20s and 30s. We saw that. Matter of fact, the race films from the 30s and 40s, we saw the passing of, what's the gentleman's name? Herb Jeffries, the Bronze Buckaroo, the Singing Cowboy, those great films, the early, as one would say back then, Negro cinema. We saw black folks, you know, you had black theaters. I mean, at that time, it had to be that way. It seems like black folks are only able to do this when it's legally sanctioned and the Knight Riders are literally really riding their horses on your ass. That's when you figure this out. But when the doors have opened and there's a belief that the white man's water is colder, which is a common colloquialism in the black community, when there's that belief, we go that direction. That's probably the failing of the civil rights movement, is that we did not really have a component for self-determination. We really didn't. Once we were allowed to sit at lunch counters and go to banks and all these other things and really commune with white folks on a financial level, that's because that's what it really was all about anyway. The money, the way that money was circulating in black communities, I think the black dollar circulated at a minimum 20 times when you had your Black Wall Streets, when you had your Durhams and your Rosewoods and your Tulsas, when you had those black financial centers, which actually circulating 20 plus times. Now it's circulating once. Our money goes out to somebody else's pocket. So that's probably one reason why you do not have a self-sustaining black movie industry. It's got to change and stop begging white folks to create black product, because it makes no sense. It just doesn't make sense. I see something else for Critical Drain. I'm going to go to a quick groove. I think I'm going to play one more James Brown song, and then we're going to go to more urban alternative grooves. Critical Dre says, black males can run, argue, fight without being called thugs. How can black males be leading men or heroes, I guess he's saying? Well, how can they not? We've seen that.
Well, You already answered that question.
Yeah, I'm not going to go back into that.
You essentially you said it. Yeah, you need to be doing your own product. That's what it comes down to. You said it masterfully. So there you go.
All right, listen, another groove. Q, I'm going to put you in the queue. and when we get back, I'm going to do a part two. Actually, before we get into any of the Woody Allen discourse, I'm going to have to do a part two, Captain. I want you to weigh in as well. A part two on the Stephen A. Smith affair. He was suspended for a week. And I'm going to have to go into this a bit more succinctly. I'm going to say like this, and I'm going to go to a groove. If we're all going to be equal, men and women, this is going to come out kind of harsh, Captain. We might be all subject to an ass whipping. If we're going to be equal, I'll explain. I think it's almost self-explanatory, Captain. If we're going to be equal, we might have to have equal access to an ass-whipping. I will clarify after the groove. This is James Brown, Message for the Soul Sisters. And again, a heavily sampled song. Captain, I didn't get into the sampling issue. Not really enough time. But hip-hop would not really exist. Not really without James Brown, because every day I'm still finding songs or little snippets of James Brown that was used as a centerpiece for a hip-hop record. A sculpture, a pinch of James Brown, either someone took an entire groove and sampled it, or they just took a sculpture, a pinch of James Brown, and it was unmistakable. This man outright thievery on the part of early hip-hop, and maybe even present-day hip-hop people. But, it's doubtful that someone will really talk. They really will not tell you the truth on that. But James Brown, they stole from that man. They really did. All right. Message from the Soul Sisters. James Brown, we'll be right back.
Soul Sisters! Soul Sisters! We've been going for the okie-dokie. The Bronx think we don't know how to get down. Let's have a meeting. Girls, let's have a meeting.
Extricate myself from that infectious groove. That was, of course, the Mighty James Brown. Actually, more specifically, that was Vicki Anderson, who is the widow of Bobby Byrd, who was also portrayed in the film. Vicki Anderson was portrayed by a lovely actress, Anjanue Ellis, portrayed Vicki Anderson in Get On Up. And, you know, without James Brown's nothing, too. You know, James Brown, that you saw in the films, that, he had his famous flames. He had his group, the JBs, and they were phenomenal musicians. There were great a lot of musicians that came and went, but you know, they cannot be discounted. Now, listening to that groove, I remember Lil' Kim, I think, sampled that. But that song has been sampled to death. And again, Captain, and I know you know this, and I know Q knows this. There have been outright grooves that, you know, it's unmistakably James Brown, and there's other things like a horn blast. Like a, I think there's a Public Enemy, one of Public Enemy's early works, the one that like they had the tea kettle sound, like the early Public Enemy. That specifically was a James Brown lick, so to speak. Unmistakable. When you go into like this early hip hop stuff, 90% of it was James Brown. The infectious groove, that part, that funk, that groove was from him. And I don't know if he was necessarily paid. I think in later years he might have gotten his due. But initially, it's outright theft. And listen, big supporter of Prince Rogers Nelson, he knows full and well, without James Brown or Michael Jackson also. You see early Michael Jackson moves as a youngster. He could do James Brown pound for pound as a kid, his moves. Without James Brown, it's safe to say those guys might not even have a career. So Mick Jagger even said, and now that I think about it, I'm a big Mick Jagger fan also. Some of his swagger and the way he moves, he said he could not do James Brown, but he said, I took some stuff. I took some stuff. It is what it is. All right, Captain, I want to do a part two, and I'll try to be brief with this. We covered this on one of our last shows, where we talked about ESPN sports analyst Stephen A. Smith. Got into trouble last week because he was trying to address the Ray Rice controversy, with Ray Rice knocking out his then-fiancée, now wife. And it was caught on video. He's dragging this unconscious woman around, unconscious, and it is unconscionable what he did. He also apologized publicly recently. So, again, I know I have to do this, which really should not be, it should be obvious that it's wrong to strike a woman. But to be honest with you, it's really wrong to strike anyone. I'd like to expand the notion that it's wrong to be violent. And I love women. And I, in my personal life, I believe in putting women on a pedestal. The only problem with that is I'm also logical. And I'm also very, very conscious of what women, or a faction of women, or a segment of the female population, what they are striving to do. And they're striving for equality. And if you're striving for equality, there's a great deal of pleasure that comes with equality, but there's also a great deal of pain that comes with equality. And you could actually interpose class with that desire for equality. So I'm thinking about what Stephen A. was trying to say. And ultimately, as a refresher course to our listening audience, what he was saying was, he used the term elements of provocation, that he went in, he said he was raised by women. Personally, if someone were to try to physically accost a female member of his family, that person would be dealt with, as anyone would understand that. But he also talked about elements of provocation. Talk about, or when you reference Solange Knowles, singer and also the sister of Beyonce Knowles, with her famous or now infamous attack on Jay-Z, would look to be an unprovoked attack, and she was kicking him and really trying to hurt Jay-Z in an elevator a few months ago. The world looked on, and they said, well, you know, she was wrong, but she really wasn't. It was thought to be somewhat perceived as being, well, she's a woman, and women are prone to histrionics. You know how they are. That, to me, is more insulting than anything, a woman, or treating anyone like an infant. Infantilizing someone. You're infantilizing women by not making them equal to anybody else. Now, if you're striving for equality, Captain, and women are doing this, they want equal pay, they want to be firemen, which means you have to be able to lift someone of great weight like a man would. You have to compete physically if you're going to be a fireman, if you're going to be a police officer. They want to be on the front line now. If you're a soldier, your gender really isn't really in this now. If you're a woman and you're in Iraq somewhere or in the Middle East, the Iraqi insurgents or the enemy is going to treat you like any other soldier, maybe even worse. So there's no time for or any consideration for, well, I'm a woman, you can't hit me because I'm a woman. No, if you're a person first. I'm not into conducting myself in a violent manner, irrespective of your gender, the size, or seek special treatment because you're a woman. That's problematic if you're looking for equality. And the element of provocation is a sincere. It's a sincere consideration. It's a sincere element, so to speak. It's a sincere element. And I think that in a time where we're seeing, I think a week ago, around Mr. Stark's area in Long Island, there was a woman, a landlord, who dismembered her female tenant for failing to pay her $200. There were body parts strewn over a number of towns on Long Island. Two women of color, but the tenant, young woman, a discrepancy of $200, had her dismembered by another woman. There's another case of a young mother who literally detached her son's penis from his scrotum in a fit of anger. She tried to literally yank his member off and then tried to cover it up. This is true. Look it up. Covered her dastardly deed with super glue. Young man went to bed crying, screaming. You can imagine. The father comes home, sees what happens. I believe it is obviously some surgical intervention. I hope he's on the road to recovery. But she did some damage to this young man in a fit of anger. So we're seeing women. As a matter of fact, what was the case, Captain? I think it was Arizona where this woman is doing heavy time now, where she allegedly stabbed and shot her lover. She claimed rape, but now they're saying it might have been more of a jealousy thing that he had other women. Maybe he didn't treat her properly. But she shot and stabbed this guy multiple times. We've seen women who, if the man in the relationship was unfaithful, they would weaponize a car, run over the man multiple times. Women are equally capable of confused. Do you want to be? And this is not to say to give a license to women hitting. I mean, women being hit. I just don't believe it, but I think it should be expanded to people. Just stop acting violently toward each other. But this whole thing that you can't hit someone because I'm a woman. Because I need extra special care because I'm a woman. You never hit a woman. No, people shouldn't really be violent. Am I wrong for this, Captain? I'm just thinking out loud here. These are the things that bother me. I'm just trying to. This is a part two. I know some of this might be repetitive, but I had to really get into how I really feel. There's some things going on with kind of this protected class, and we've seen black folk pull this. Because, you know, it's the victimization model. You know, I was enslaved. My people were enslaved, so that gives me an excuse for not selling or not producing. I can't. Learned helplessness. But there's power. You can gain power from victimization. Again, pick up Dr. Shelby Steele's The Content of Our Character. Pick it up. Captain, what are your thoughts?
Well, as I said before, it's the mathematics on the situation. That's why Stephen A. Smith ultimately got suspended for a week. It's just based on the mathematics. That was in the last show. I'm not going to get into the mathematics this time around. But I will tell you this. Fairness is the illusion of the weak to protect you from the strong to no avail. When you have power, you do what you want. Now, everyone talks about fairness, but let's see if there's really fairness. Let's go through a few examples. Tall man versus short man. Tall man has the advantage practically in everything. Job, promotion, women, need I say more. Pretty woman versus ugly woman. Pretty woman has the advantage practically with everything. Need I say more? Okay? Born into a rich family versus poor family. What does the rich guy do born into the family? He goes to an expensive private school, not the $600 a month private school that a lot of people go to. No, the expensive one, the real expensive, exclusive one. Then he goes to Ivy League school. He wasn't any kind of genius. Gets a business degree. You play the same game, go into public school, and then go to City College and get a business degree. Your business degree is F all. This man here, because he went to Ivy League school and was from a rich family, had the connections, he has a high-end six-figure job. Same degree. Now, we know there's other ways of getting into Ivy League school, but we know a lot of times most of these people are coming from rich families. Let me go on. 6'2" guard has to guard LeBron James. He's on the court. That's not fair. LeBron James drops 40 points on him. But that's his job. He's 6'2". Couldn't make him 6'8 and jump like LeBron James. No, you're 6'2". You just have to handle it. Black man goes before the court. They tell you, jury of your peers. He goes before the court. It's the judge is a white woman, and most of the jury is white. Now, we know how decision-making is done. It's done in the limbic system. That means it's done emotionally. That also means tribalism is going to be a factor. Come on. So where's the fairness? It's an illusion all around us, and we're looking for the illusion. So when it's time to grab the illusion and it disappears, everyone goes, oh, here's the reality. The reality is Stephen A. Smith was a dog and they whipped him because what he said was profoundly correct. That's the reality of it, the reality. So everyone needs to wake up. It's a lie. Everything here is a misdirection. That's what they're doing here. And then you grab it because you think it's real and it disappears. It disappeared on Stephen A. Smith. You see it? You see what happened? Why did he get suspended? What's going on? They put him in the back room and the higher up said, listen, you know, I agree with you, but, you know, we have women here. You have all these women groups, you know, We got to just do this to make it look good. Then we'll bring you back later. Now, if it was really men-driven, that wouldn't happen. It's not men-driven. Misdirection. Now, I could get into all the psychology and the mathematics, but I'm going to leave that alone for this time. I'll maybe do that another time because this is going to happen with someone else. But I'm going to just leave you with that. Fairness is an illusion of the weak to protect you from the strong, to no avail. When you have power, you do what you want. The female consciousness this time around had the power. So this is what happened. Back over to you, Seraphim Nerd.
You know what thing also, and I think from a purely logical perspective, Captain, when you think about the notion of verbal abuse, you know, we've seen women make cases or make a case for verbal abuse being as on equal footing with physical abuse. He verbally abused me.
Absolutely.
People will seek legal redress based on verbal abuse, not just physical abuse. So, what does that mean? Does that mean that only a woman can say anything? Because they're saying, well, one has a right to be vocal and free speech and say anything without fear of being physically assaulted. That's correct. But what if what you said is tantamount to being abusive? Because in a den of men, with men, someone sets something off, Captain, by saying something. Oftentimes, 90% of the time,
all the time.
Listen. I know it's all the time. But I'm going to say just for whatever, for fairness. And you just said fairness really is an illusion. But for fairness, let's say it's in the 90 percentile range. It's because someone with 200-pound plus men, or 180 and change, but let's go 180 and up, or even 150 and up, someone said something smart, and then the other person reacted physically. Doesn't make it right, but this is how it goes. Even with women, go to World Star Hip Hop, begrudgingly. We're at the point now where you will see women attacking other women because someone said something. This is the era of Sharkeesha, Captain. I wouldn't, as a 200-plus-pound, 210 and change, plus-pound man, I would not want to get hit by Sharkeesha. I'll tell you right now. Did you see, I'm referencing the, now it's a video meme. Sharkeesha struck her friend unprovoked. First thing, we don't even know what it was about. She hit and kicked. I mean, she went ham, as they say on the street, violently. A woman. So what kind of woman will that be in a relationship? Who is she? And what kind of person is that in a relationship? But if we just go by her gender, she's absolved of any kind of negligence. See, this stuff has to be deconstructed, Captain. We just can't speak in a hyperbolic, non-sequitur kind of way. They don't make any sense. So when Stephen A. Smith's colleague weighed in, she weighed in on this whole, you know, she weighed in as a woman, as a protected class. Well, I'm a woman. You can't talk. You can't do this to me. Just on being a woman. That's not enough. Mm-hmm. And if you're seeking equality, everyone is has equal access to an ass whipping. If we're going to be fair, as a person, not you can't just say I'm a woman and I have special needs, because you can't be special and then seek to be as a fire person or fireman, as a police officer. There's no room for that. As a soldier. There's no room for this. And this is from a person that I'm not a violent person. I've never reacted physically with a woman. I just don't believe in that. But I think the problem when I'm seeing people being dismembered, members being taken away from young children, their private parts are being dismantled, people are being run over, other women. Matter of fact, there's a case a few weeks ago, a rather brolic, another street term, a rather brolic woman who was pretty big, that she looked like she'd go toe-to-toe with a man, and she beat up a smaller woman. It was videotaped. I think it was in Philadelphia. The element of provocation was that the younger woman, I think she's of Latin descent, the smaller woman of Latin descent, said something to the other woman's McDonald's employer. Said something to her to get her fired, allegedly. Something about her fooling around with someone on the job. That might not have been a wise thing to do, obviously. This woman pulls a smaller woman to the side and proceeds to punch her in the face on the ground while the smaller woman's child, 3-year-old child, was there and started kicking the large woman. So the child's going to react instinctively. I mean, he really couldn't do much, but God bless him. And this woman said to the, as she continued to put her fist in her face, she proceeded to say, if you don't tell your son to get off me, I'm going to punch him too. This is from a woman. Now, what kind of woman is that in a relationship? Who is she in a relationship? So, again, Steve A. Smith was onto something, but now we're in the era of phoniness. Now we have to be phony. I got to believe that Sharkeesha is a princess in a relationship. It doesn't make any sense. And can a man be verbally abused if it's about words? Because words do matter on some level. You know, a woman or a man is equally as capable of verbally abusing someone to the point where that person might react physically. Because with women, in this day and age, we're seeing men or alleged males, they're not really men, alleged males videotaping women. When someone said something it wasn't supposed to say, the woman reacted physically, and the men are videotaping it. They're not even trying to break it up. I would break it up as a man. My role would say, not at all. They don't do that in this 21st century. They videotape it and put it on Facebook or on WorldStar. That's it. I just wish we were allowed to deconstruct what Stephen A. was talking about, and I'd like to hear from a woman to tell me I'm wrong. If you're striving for equality, what is the implicit specialness of a woman? Because what makes you more special than a man? If you're striving for equality, how does that work when you're on the front line? Or you're walking the beat, or you're trying to get someone off of a windowsill when the fire's burning. How does that work out? I don't get it, Captain.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. You're totally right. But so was he. That's the point. He was.
Stephen A. makes a great living.
You know,
he doesn't want to move. He doesn't want to mess it up.
Yeah. He wasn't trying to, based on what he said. Come on, we've seen guys just go off the rail. We've seen guys do that. This was not the case here. Come on now. If we're being honest, that's a four-letter word. Can't do that.
Being honest.
You know, but if we're being honest, he wasn't off the rail. He was right on the track. We're being honest. He didn't say anything. He didn't say anything. He just didn't give you the benefit of the doubt. He said what happened was a tragic situation. A man shouldn't be doing that. Let's look at it with a microscope. Whoa. That's it. Get him off the show. There you go.
All right, Cat, let's go to a quick groove. Let's try a little bit of Afropunk. Afropunk's coming up in a couple of weeks, actually, folks. And we'll try to get Jocelyn Cooper on, who spearheads Afropunk. She runs the operation over there, so I'd like to get her on once again. And I suspect there's going to be probably 50,000 people. Each year, the amount of people that show up to this thing rises exponentially. So I wouldn't doubt that there's going to be even more people and less of a reason not for SiriusXM to have an urban alternative channel. Heck, they're giving Jenny McCarthy a show. You know, she lost her gig at The View. Now they're just giving away. Well, that, listen, I guess it goes back to Critical Dre talking about white characters are not painted. I guess I shouldn't be surprised that they'll give a attractive blonde who is perceived to be attractive. They will give her own show. They just do. But when you try to propose something an urban alternative show, they scratch their heads on that. It boggles the mind. All right, going to an Afropunk group. This is the Skins, Surf. We'll be back in a few moments. We'll talk about Woody Allen. One moment, we'll be right back. absolute very best of urban alternative groove. That was The Skins, Surf. Afropunk.com, Afropunk.com, and again, Afropunk.com, 2 or 3 weeks. Definitely going to be in attendance. I suspect the captain will be there and maybe some of the inner sanctum as well. I'm always supporting the alternative, whether it's politics, discourse, and most certainly music. There's other things going on, folks. We can do it all. We can, you know, pat our heads and rub our stomachs at the same time. We can do this. It doesn't have to always be a minstrel show. So without further ado, I want to talk about actually an article written by a friend of the show, Sergio Mims, noted film critic and playwright also. I believe he won an award recently. And Sergio waxes about Woody Allen, famed New York director of Jewish descent and alleged molester. I don't know how that works itself into it. And philanderer, he's a dude with problems, but he's a genius, but he's got problems. Anyway, I'm not even going to address that. This is what Sergio says. Again, certainly go to Shadow and Act at IndieWire.com. Just Google Shadow and Act. You'll definitely pull it up. Very successful site, highly popular, not in the same universe as Bossip or Mediateka. I shouldn't even be mentioning those other sites in juxtaposition with Shadow and Act. Anyway, he says here, Woody Allen says he won't hire a black actor unless the role calls for one, whatever that means. I'm going to read a little bit of this. It says, Sergio says, so you know Woody Allen, of course, the filmmaker who's seemingly been a critic's darling since the early 70s, your typical liberal New Yorker who also loves to play jazz. But there's that one thing, though. You know what I'm talking about. The one thing that's been whispered about or even loudly discussed ever since Allen's started writing and directing his own films. And that thing is the fact that you never see black people in his movies. And considering that most of his films have been set in New York, one of the most racially diverse cities on the entire planet, how is it that black people are virtually non-existent in his films? Well, that's not entirely true. There have been a few exceptions. There was Sonia Rolland playing Josephine Baker in Midnight in Paris, although she was basically relegated to the background as an extra with no lines. And there was Hazel Goodman in his 1997 film Deconstructing Harry, playing, take a guess, a prostitute, but of course, maybe the most significant presence of a black actor in a Woody Allen film was when Chiwetel Ejiofor appeared in Melinda and Melinda. And that's about as much as I can come up with. So what's the problem? Why hasn't Allen had black actors in his film, especially in starring roles? Well, he was just recently asked that question in a profile about him in the New York Observer. When asked why black actors haven't appeared in his films, the writer of the piece states that Allen was horrified when the subject was brought up. But Allen has his reasons. It's very simple. According to the filmmaker, not unless I write a story that requires it. You don't hire people based on race. You hire people based on who is correct for the part. The implication is that I'm deliberately not hiring black actors, which is stupid. I cast only what's right for the part. Race, friendship means nothing to me except who was right for the part. And then Sergio says, run that by me again. All right. Honestly, you know, we could say he gave a politically correct answer. We can say that, and we could say, well, you know, we would want folks to be more enlightened and to say that, well, yeah, race doesn't really matter, but at the same time, if race doesn't really matter, then whatever role you put forward, any actor of any hue should be able to present his abilities, to showcase his skills, and the skill – he's not really talking about it from that angle. I think Seinfeld went into this one time also. There's a footage of him recently, within a year and a half. I think he was an audience member in something, or actually I think he might have been a guest on some show. And he also talked about his comedians in cars getting coffee. and how he really hasn't had that many black comedians on there. And he said, well, you know, I'm doing a YouTube show with people that I commune with, and if I happen to commune with a black person, but I'm not really looking for that right now. You know, I think women and black folk were not really being shown. I think Chris Rock was on there, and I think that might have been it. Sarah Silverman on the female side might have been one woman on there. He believes that, well, I'm just looking for the funny. I'm looking for the funny. I'm not looking for the black or the female. So Woody Allen kind of gave a contrite answer in similar fashion. Captain, what's your thought process on this?
I think Seinfeld's answer was actually a lot better because he could honestly, even though that might not be the case, doesn't think those people are necessarily funny. So he just put the people on there that were actually funny. So you see, you could actually somewhat do that to a certain extent based on what he said and what he's doing. But now Woody Allen is entirely different because what does Hollywood do? Let's flip-flop it. Let's do the inverse of that. Look at all of these religious movies, all these King movies, all these Cleopatra movies. Now, we know those people were not supposed to be white. Why did they cast white people? Because it would sell more. It just works better. So this is the history of Hollywood. Woody Allen, same thing. You know, that's what you do. You do what makes you feel comfortable and what also is going to sell more. You go all black from their perspective, based on their statistics, they'll say it will not sell as well. Also, sometimes the people involved are not as comfortable with putting the black people in there for certain roles. It is not comfortable for various reasons. So it's what he's saying from a Woody Allen standpoint, I think is a lot of malarkey. I think Sergio Mims had it correct in this statement. That's what I just feel. He had it correct. And also what we said earlier, we just need our own system to do our own thing. That's it. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you will do a lot better. That's just me. Back over to you, Sir Afro Man.
Yes, once again, you know, what I was looking at, I think when I saw the Guardians, but I do recollect definitely having seen the James Brown biopic Get On Up this morning, the opening trailers. There's a film called Exodus, Gods and Kings, starring Batman, formerly Batman, Christian Bale. And it's a UK/USA biblical epic film. Ridley Scott put this together, directed by the great Ridley Scott. And I'm not really seeing people of color in this thing. And it's a biblical drama. We see John Turturro, Rosedale's own John Turturro, shouting out Queens, Sigourney Weaver, Vince Kingsley, maybe he counts, Christian Bale. But, I mean, you know, this is a biblical film. Again, it probably occurring in the Middle East. I think you go there now, you're going to see a lot of color in the Middle East. But for some reason, when we go to biblical times, all that color disappears. They keep on doing this. We saw this in 1960 with Elizabeth Taylor. I mean, you know, they're not afraid to go there. I mean, now at some point they should be shamed into multicultural casting for a biblical film. Matter of fact, there really should be not that many European faces in a biblical film, if you're really going to be honest. But they're not trying to be honest. So black folks, brown folks, Middle Eastern folks, they need to stop. I mean, listen, you got a film coming out, no, sorry, a TV show called Hieroglyph on Fox dealing with Egyptian mythology, and there are no Egyptians in it. There are no Egyptian actors in a film centered around Egypt. I mean, they're not. This is the same conversation we had yet with the passionate one we had last week, Captain, when I was conversing with the Uncanny Daryl B. talking about police brutality. We didn't have enough time to talk about that again. We see that perhaps a correct a designation for what happened to Eric Garner, that incident has been labeled a homicide by the police, NYPD. It's been labeled a homicide. But to expect fairness, I said it in more grotesque terms after the show. I wish I could really say it. Maybe if I ever see Q-Storm in person or something like that, I would say what I really said. Because it would hit harder personally than what I could say on air. But I'll give you a G-rated version. To expect fairness from this community, I wish I could say what I really said off air, Captain. But it's crazy talk. You know how the police get down after all this time. Lucy continues to pull the football away from Charlie Brown. We know how this ends. Why do you keep on going through the trap door, black people? So even with the filmmaking, we know how this works. They're not afraid. You would sit there and say, okay, white culture, you would think after all this time there would be some humility to say, you know what? You're doing a film about the Middle East. Maybe you might want to have a majority Middle Eastern cast in there, Middle Easterns, African. Maybe you might want to consider that because that's who's there now. No. They still have British with British accents. They're still doing this. They've been doing it. They did it in the 1930s at the advent of sound, Captain, talkies. They did it through the 1960s, and they're doing it in the millennium. The new millennium, they're still doing it. They're not going to respect you. We just saw Noah. They're still doing it. I mean, you know.
That was the best. That was the best, Noah.
I mean, it's coming off silly. There's an article, actually. I wish I had could pull up. Maybe I'll try to find this young woman. Young white woman who said, you know what, I'm white, and I'm tired of seeing white people. She had a moment of clarity. She said, I see white people all the time on film. Where are the black and brown people? I want to see color. So as a white person, I'm tired of being lied to. I mean, you know, enlightened, educated white people also want to see the real. At some point, James Brown, at some point, or even Little Richard, who he was also in the film as far as the character of Little Richard. There was a time in the early, the nascent period of race music turning into rock and roll, where you saw the white power structure putting their face on the music, literally, where you had Pat Boone performing Tutti Frutti. It's laughable. The white audience said, wait a minute. We don't want to hear Pat Boone do Tutti Frutti. We want to see Little Richard. We want the real. At some point, everybody, irrespective of race, would like to see the real. But, you know, they're going to give you what they can get away with. Captain, amazingly, and without the uncanny Daryl B, we're about a minute from closing. We've got a lot of topics we didn't even get a chance to even cover. We'll have to address it on Wednesday. What are your thoughts, sir?
Well, I just got the email from Mr. Daryl B. He can't wait to deliver his Guardians of the Galaxy review. So there you go. He can't wait.
Yeah, well, you know, listen, he has full working knowledge of the cosmic Marvel line. I'm about 50 to 65%. It's just that line is so involved. You know, Adam Warlock, all that stuff is mixed in with that. So we'll see if that could be a movie unto itself. I'd like to even see it. Forget about it. There's even the Supernatural line. When we see Doc Strange come about, maybe we will see a Wesley Snipes return to fold. Maybe. That would be fair. But I just had a big diatribe on fairness, Captain, so it is what it is. All right, folks, leaving you with Sometimes by Brand New Heavies. We'll see you on Wednesday. It's been real.
Come on, ma, we got to make things right. Sometimes we really need to make things right. Come on, ma, we got to make things right. It's the abstract, baby, got to make things right.
Talking about a revolution, or maybe just a change of mind. Working on my constitution, I began to realize I've been doing wrong forever. Trouble was my favorite game, yeah. Breaking hearts I thought was so clever, but I'm the one who got her playing. I never could see it coming, no. I never could feel it till it's coming close. But all of that don't mean nothing, no. When you're all alone, oh, sometimes you gotta do right to be happy. One time you gotta believe in what you feel inside. Find happiness, yeah. Sometimes, you're looking at a transformation that's brought about a change in me. Love's a brand new situation. Cause I can see it coming, yeah, yeah. And I can feel it coming loud and down. Loving is so rewarding, yeah. When you let it out, sometimes you gotta do right to be happy. One time you gotta believe in what you feel inside. Sometimes you gotta do right to find happy.
My, your man could be a little wild. Sometimes I need the love to get me open, cause I'm hoping that we can make it peaches and cream. Intervene inside my dream with your high class thing. Got me slitting at my seam like a fat cat gasping. I'm asking, can you marry me? I'm saying, I'm asking. Sometimes a fella need to do the thing that's right, whether it be making love or holding the mic. So come on, ma, we got to make things right. Sometimes we really need to make things right. Come on, ma, we got to make things right. Sometimes we really, really got to make things right. Come on, ma, we got to make things right. Sometimes we really need to make things right. Sometimes we really need to make things right. It's the abstract, baby, hold the hand while I'm tight.
Sometimes you gotta do right.